to death. It's going to be one of those shows. Today is April 10th, 2019. This is episode number 509 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. And really thinking about that Cheese Whiz. Philadelphia, you know, whatever. So to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, join me over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group where you can chime in and talk and chitty chat and visit with other listeners of the show and that sort of thing. Now, hailing from the other side of the pond, from my perspective, or just the right side of the pond from her perspective, I am joined today by a Brit with the wit, Charlotte Henry. Charlotte, thanks for joining me.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Indeed.
And I'm sorry I seem to have broken you before the show started.
You did. That's beside the point.
I'm sorry. It's my fault.
Yeah, it is. It is. Totally. It's completely and totally your fault. All right, but we do have some fun topics today. I'm looking forward to the show. We also have a sponsor, Molecule. They make an air purifier. I'm going to talk about them a little later in the show. But first, Charlotte Henry.
Yes, Brian Chaffin.
The Brit with the wit. We have Queen Oprah and Prince Harry. Here's a question.
Right.
Here's a question for you. Who's more important?
Wow. It's big. I mean, let's be honest. There's a reason why Prince Harry's working with Oprah, right? It's that way around, isn't it?
Right. And that's why we're talking about it on the show, by the way, is because they're going to be doing something for Apple together.
They are. They're going to be doing a new docuseries focusing on mental health for Apple. We know Oprah obviously was a big part of the Showtime event. She's one of the big selling points for Apple TV Plus. And now they've managed to get British royalty as well as American royalty on board.
and Oprah is probably one of the closest things to royalty that that the US has.
Yeah, since you got rid of ours, yeah.
Yeah, since we, yeah, you know. Well, we didn't need you.
Mm. No, look, I think this is, it's really fascinating that this partnership is going to exist. I think it's fascinating. So from a kind of British perspective, it's fascinating that a young British royal is working with a big tech company in the shape of Apple. It that is not what royals have done. Like, that's just not what royals do normally. So it's pretty interesting that it's just a further indication of the way William and particularly Harry are moving, that they're happy to work with a company like Apple, not just do the classic army, charity, that kind of thing.
Wait, hold on. Isn't that just a little bit too close to something really dirty like work? I mean, like... what's the political and social aspect of one of the royals doing a project like this?
So, to be fair to William and Harry, they have worked in a way that's been different from many of their ancestors and their predecessors in senior royal roles. So I'm kind of, if anyone was going to do it, it would be a Prince Harry type character. Remember, he's almost not, it's almost impossible for him to now become the British to the king. That's not good. So he can kind of, he has a bit of freedom to do this stuff. We've seen the royals, particularly led by the younger generation, doing a bit more outreach. And this, as we said, this is a series about mental health, which is a subject Prince William and his wife, Kate, and Prince Harry have made a big, big focus of their work. They've done a lot of mental health. They've started a foundation called Heads Together. Harry also runs the Invictus Games for wounded soldiers and has done other work in this field. He's talked himself very candidly about his struggles with mental illness. So the subject works for him. But it's, look, it's still fascinating that, you know, it, in previous times, he, a royal might have done a set piece interview on the BBC or something.
Right.
And that would have still been quite a big deal. To do, to produce, to co-produce a series with Oprah Winfrey for Apple on a platform that doesn't exist yet is kind of a, is a really interesting dynamic to be happening.
You know, it, it, it is, especially when you consider the fact that she already has her own cable network. Right? I mean,
you Oprah know, has and, anything she wants.
Right. I mean, no, but I mean that she already has her own platform for delivering any kind of content that she wants.
Absolutely. Magazines, cable network.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
a gazillion social media followers. It's very interesting
how much she has clearly, clearly gone all in with Apple. And I wonder in this particular case.
I think it's called the paycheck.
No.
Sorry, is that too cynical?
There's a lack of information here because, and so it's really easy to project whatever one wants to, but I don't think Oprah has ever shown a proclivity towards doing things for just a paycheck. Because no, like money was thrown at her to keep her show not on her, you know, to not go do her own network.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're right. And I'm absolutely, yeah, no, I am being slightly facetious because we don't quite know what Oprah is actually being paid, but look, we know Apple are putting a lot of money into her personally and behind the project she's working on. One imagines that this will be the same. That will include the project she is doing with Prince Harry. Obviously, it is a subject, like I said, that's close to... Oprah's done a lot of work on mental health. Prince Harry has. It, you know, you've also... We've got the Meghan factor as well. That you have this Prince Harry's obviously married to Meghan Markle, an American star. And that gives him some insight and access to the American audience in a way wars probably haven't previously. So there's a lot of dynamics at play here.
I also wanted to add that there's no way that this documentary is being produced for the money. this is not
of course
going
not.
To be
That's
a ratings
absolutely right.
blockbuster.
No. No, I think what will be interesting and what we don't know yet is if Oprah will interview Harry. That's not been confirmed. We don't know if he's actually going to appear. And so that I think that would get in some numbers. I think they're picking on quite a good topic of the moment. Like people are, for very good reason, concerned about mental health provision, concerned about the way we stigmatize mental illness, and so it's two very significant figures to take on and have that conversation. It fits with Apple's brand. Whether it's going to be a bit bland and a bit safe, which is an issue we're discussing in various contexts at Mac Observer at the moment. With that, you know, is Apple's content going to just be a bit beige? We don't know that yet.
Right.
But look, as I understand it, you guys are kind of, Americans are always fascinated with what the royal family are up to. There's a kind of celebrity thing around them. Who isn't interested in kind of what Oprah's up to? So
well, I think
there's a lot, it's got a lot going for it, this idea, I think.
Probably started, at least in a modern context, with Princess Diana.
Of course, she
was a huge hit in the 70s.
Here. Absolutely, and obviously Harry's mother.
Yeah.
So there's a link there as well.
Was it the 80s?
80s more.
Yeah, my mistake, sorry. Getting my own childhood mixed up. I mean, my grandfather's childhood, because of course I'm not old enough to remember these things.
No, of course not. Yes. Moving on.
Old woman. Right, so...
Brian, what were the 80s like?
You know, the 80s were really interesting. Is this a serious question?
Obviously not, it's me, but...
Do you want an answer?
Yes.
The '80s were the '70s were really lame. There was a phrase that was bandied about by, you know, the way too cool to be anything other than cynical crowd. That was the '70s sucked, and that's because the '70s did suck. It was a wretched decade. It was bleak. There was a lot of, like, there's a reason why there was a whole lot of post-apocalyptic fiction that was written in the 70s. And, you know, the oil embargoes, the Arab-Israeli conflict that was getting more and more out of control, the turmoil in Iran, the American hostage situation. There were just a lot going on in the 70s that was really bleak and miserable. And inflation was an issue. You know, when I grew up, like, vegetables came out of a can. Like, that's how I got vegetables. They came out of a can. Fish came out of a can. Like, the only fish I ever had was like tuna fish or salmon. And both in a can. And, like, the 70s were just miserable. The 80s were kind of weird. And
yes.
And in part, like, you know, like MTV was such a weird influence on American culture in particular. And probably, you know, probably is greatly responsible for a lot of the exportation of American culture to the rest of the world.
Definitely.
And at the same time, like, I started hearing this overproduced crappiness with music. And I started hearing a lot of recording was moving away from reel to reel and moving more towards electronic processing. It had this weird effect, and there was this strange crossover between rock and pop and top 40. And yeah, I don't know. 80s were weird. The 70s sucked. The 90s were just kind of dirty and grungy.
Nirvana. We like that.
Yeah, that's true. I do love some Nirvana. Anyway, right. So there's that. There's that, and it's I would love to know who reached out to whom for this project.
I would love to know that answer, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the original meetings.
Yeah, right. And this has been in the works for a while. This has to have been.
So yes, we're led to believe it had been. Yeah, I would be really. So there's obviously a connection between Oprah and the royal family. We saw Oprah at Meghan's and Harry's wedding. There's obviously links, and they obviously have access to each other. How that goes to them producing a show for Apple is a very interesting question. I mean, has Tim Cook hung out with Prince Harry to discuss the show? Have the other execs working on this? No, it's kind of intriguing. Have they all been having tea at Buckingham Palace discussing producing a show?
That is a good question. Who flew to whom?
Right.
Who flew to whom? Did Prince Harry go? Well, we you would know if he went to the States, right?
You assume so. It's not inconceivable we wouldn't, but
I mean,
we didn't know he was serving in Afghanistan for 3 months.
That's a little bit different.
That's true.
That's essentially a state secret. But yeah. Like, isn't the normal travel schedule of the royals pretty well followed in Britain?
Theoretically, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Of course, you know, they could have done it all remotely.
They could have FaceTimed each other, yeah, it's true.
FaceTimed or, you know, even Skype.
I wonder, do you reckon that Oprah, Prince Harry, Meghan, Tim Cook have like a Slack working group? They Slack each other during the day?
Yeah. I bet they do.
Do they have a Slack channel? That's what we want to know, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that is what we want to know. We want to be inside that
Slack. A WhatsApp group? Maybe it's a WhatsApp group because that's, encrypted.
Yeah, I bet it's probably more like Slack.
I'd like it to be Slack.
Well, so, all right, here's the deal. These two people pairing up is like, if Apple wasn't in the story, we wouldn't be talking about it, but it would be big news in other parts of the media industry. And the fact that it's for a documentary and it's going to be an Apple is going to end up bringing a lot of attention to this series that it may not have gotten, even if it was just Oprah herself, or if it was just Prince Harry, or if it was just Apple, you know, hiring someone else who was making a series. No, like
the combination of all of it is significant.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to end up getting a lot of attention. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. I will probably watch it when I probably would not have if it weren't for that combination of the three.
Right, absolutely. Also, the other point that's kind of might be easy to overlook is that, you know, Prince Harry, if he'd have wanted to do a documentary series, could have done it with a Netflix, with an Amazon Prime, like I say, with the BBC. He could have done this.
Everyone would have lined up to do it.
Right. It's interesting he has chosen to do it with Apple. Does that? I think that shows a kind of having faith in the platform Apple is producing and putting forward.
Well, you know, but it may actually not be Apple. It may be faith in Oprah. And Oprah's
put I'm sure that's a part of it. But I think the fact that he obviously sees Apple as a safe environment in which to operate, and I think that's quite significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Is this getting attention in the UK?
Yeah, it was the front page story of the London Evening Standard this evening.
It was not, I don't think, a front page story on any of the American papers.
Yeah, so the London Evening Standard is like in London, and it kind of gets picked up nationwide. If there's big stories, it's the main. It's the only real evening-only newspaper, mm-hmm. Edited by former Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne. And it was front page.
So this is essentially getting Apple's platform a lot. I mean, like, Apple's TV Plus platform gets attention in the States in part because Apple is such a large corporation within the U.S., right?
Right.
They don't necessarily get that same kind of attention in the UK, and so this by working with Prince Harry and Oprah on this documentary, Apple has essentially got itself all kinds of free press.
Oh, certainly, yeah, it's a big press hit, and yeah, no, it's a very significant big. Press hit. I think there was interest in Apple TV Plus in the UK. I don't think it was as big as the American stuff, but Apple is a huge global company. Mm-hmm. Anything it does is interesting to people around the world, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously having a British royal and a popular British royal and a very, you know, a young, handsome, you know, engaging British royal do this show with this company obviously is going to attract more interest than other stuff would in the UK.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Like the Sir David Attenborough series that's just launching on Netflix has also been quite a big deal. I didn't see it on the front page of any newspapers though.
Right. All right. That makes sense. It's an interesting development. I look forward to seeing where it goes. We don't have a time frame for this series, do we?
Not that I've seen. We don't. It's just one of those things again with Apple TV Plus, where we don't really know much. I mean, for all we know, I don't even think anything has started recording on this series. I might be wrong about that, but I don't think anything has started recording.
I imagine that if the deal had been inked in time for its showtime, that it would have been mentioned in that.
You would have to imagine so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know that Prince Harry would have flown overseas to, you know, stand on the stage and be part of the presentation, but I bet there would have been some kind of mention from Oprah during her segment of that event.
Imagine if Prince Harry had turned up at its showtime.
That's true. That would have been interesting.
Imagine if it had gone black. The stage had gone black. The lights had gone up, and Prince Harry's hanging out on the stage.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, maybe. You know, I've made the argument that that event wasn't for tech people. That event was for Hollywood.
Correct.
And
I agree with that. I agree with your point on that.
So, but at the same time, a lot of the audience was the tech press.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know that it would have been that big a deal if Prince Harry had been standing on the stage, but maybe.
I mean, I think British Royal turns up at tech event is quite a big deal.
Yeah, fair enough. And he didn't. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that means that the ink hadn't been signed yet.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. The other possibility, of course, is that they wanted a second hit of press coverage. Like, you get a second bite of the cherry by announcing this later, don't you?
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on, but before we do, let me tell you all about The Molecule. Molecule, I am proud to have them sponsor the show. They make an air purifier that I love. I've got two of them. And it's an air purifier that can actually destroy allergens. How does it do that, you say? Well, they're using what they call, and I'm going to make sure I read this to get it correct, photoelectrochemical oxidation, or PECO. And using this technology, they can break down a pollutant to its basic, harmless components. Now, this thing has several modes. You control it from your smartphone. In quiet mode, it is just that. It is quiet. It's got a light component that helps destroy. It's part of the purification process. You can have that turned off at night if you're keeping it in your bedroom. On a schedule. I love this thing. I am so glad that I have them. I got them when I was very concerned about the air quality when there were forest fires in Northern California and Silicon Valley. Air quality just went way into dangerous territory. And I fortunately already had my molecules before that happened. I was set, and inside my house, my air quality was outstanding. I love these things. And I love the fact that they're sponsoring this show. And because they're sponsoring the show, you can get $75 off your first order. And all you have to do is visit molecule.com and enter code ACM at checkout. That's $75 off your first order. Now, Molecule is spelled with a K. That's MOLEKULE.com. Enter checkout code ACM. One more time. That's molecule.com, MOLEKULE.com, and enter code ACM. Get $75 off your first order. If you are at all concerned about air in your home or your office, or I don't know, whatever, you should check out Molecule. It's better than a HEPA filter. It can destroy pollutants and allergens 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can. I mean, come on, that's good stuff. So check it out again, molecule.com, MOLEKULE.com, and enter code ACM at checkout. Save $75 off your first order. All right, Charlotte, let's see here. Our second topic is actually kind of related.
Yes, it's almost like we planned it this way.
I mean, let's not get
don't believe it, listeners.
Yeah, let's not get carried away. This is still ACM. So
right, exactly. So, this is planning, we're still just kind of hanging out.
Planning is always kind of, you know, absolutely at a minimum. So, you know, I don't want anybody to get upset. But so we have this story coming from who actually said that? It was J.J. Abrams that said it.
Yes, he was speaking to Fast Company.
All right, well, so tell us what the story is.
So the story, there was a whole interview which is worth reading in its own right. at Fast Company with J.J. Abrams. He was talking about Star Wars and all sorts of other things. The thing that was interesting to me and that I linked to on TMO was that he also talked about working with Apple and what that was like. He described it. I think he's pretty excited, but he also described it as a bit like the Wild West. And I think what he meant was there is a lot we don't know. It's a very exciting new platform that I'm working on, and we can kind of do what we want. I think that is what he meant. Whether Apple PR will be delighted with him describing their platform as the Wild West, I'm not so sure. But the full quote was, "You could say 6 or 8 episodes. What does it even look like when it comes out? I have faith in Apple, but again, it's not like there's complete clarity on how it presents in the world, how it's perceived. What's the interface?" is one of the things he asks. "How do people feel when they use it?" So who knows? It's the Wild West.
So it's kind of, is he complaining or is he, I mean, like you said pre-show that you thought he was like hopeful or excited.
I think so. I think he was saying, "Isn't this exciting? I've got lots of freedom." I think that was the vibe.
Well, the quote you just read, though, sounds more like he's talking about, like, he's not sure how getting the content is going to work.
Right, and neither do any of us. He's right. What does the interface look like? You know, we, as he says, "I have faith in Apple." You know, Apple are, we believe, can produce a good platform. You know, we saw what they do. We know what they've done with iTunes, with Apple News. Those are nice looking products. Apple TV in its current form is nice looking. People like using it. We know that Apple can produce a good interface and good software and good media platforms. But we don't know what Apple TV Plus looks like. We don't know how it's going to present its original content. And that's what J.J. Abrams is saying. I think. I mean, what did you think it was more negative and more complaining?
Well, I don't know. I don't really know how to take it. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of J.J. Abrams. I don't think he's a very good storyteller.
Controversial.
He's too afraid to kill off characters. He's always bringing characters back.
And not enough death for Brian.
Well, it's not the okay, see. All right, here's where I'm a huge fan of Joss Whedon. Okay. And one of the things that Joss Whedon brought to television was being willing to kill characters. And he's famously said more than once about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He said, "I give you what you want, not what you need." No, excuse me. Golly, I got that exactly. Okay, great. I erased it. No one will know that I said that. So Joss Whedon famously said, "I give you what you need, not necessarily what you want." And that may be a slight paraphrase, but the point is they like Joss doesn't deliberately go out to kill characters that you love, but when the story demands it, he does it. And he was the first to do that on American TV, probably anywhere TV. And then J.J. Abrams, who definitely puts together a good looking show, it never seemed to grasp that idea. He didn't like an Alias. He was constantly bringing people back together again, and it didn't make any sense for the story. It's like, yeah, we love these characters, we love these actors and these actresses, but they're dead. Let them stay dead, because that's pretty. That like affected me that they died.
Yeah.
Right. And he did the same thing with Lost. He does the same thing all the time.
I confess something to you, Brian?
Yeah.
I never watched Lost.
Yeah, fair enough. I stopped watching after, I think, the second season. Got tired of it.
After you realized that everyone in the back of the plane survived.
That did not help, yes.
That's the conspiracy, isn't it? Back of the plane you live, front of the plane you die.
Something
isn't that it?
Something along those lines. I lost track of the show. Here's another thing. Like, again, from Joss Whedon setting the bar for me.
Yep.
Joss Whedon would plan out story arcs well in advance. Like, he had 5 seasons of Firefly planned.
Okay.
And Fox famously canned the show after the first season, which was a half a season.
And oh my God! Sorry, you were talking to me about Firefly in the pre-show.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing in The Big Bang Theory about it, isn't there? Where they cancel Firefly, and Sheldon gets really upset about it.
Yes. Yeah, lots of people are upset. At least in a slightly older age bracket, and. You know, he would have these story arcs planned, and things would like weave in and out. Everything was in service of the story arc. And then I thought that like J.J. Abrams was doing the same thing with Lost, but then like I saw a couple of interviews with him, and it'd always be like, oh no, we didn't plan that. It's just, you know, one of the writers thought it would be cool if we used that here. And it's like, oh, you don't have anything planned, man. You don't have anything planned at all. You're just like flying by the seat of your pants constantly.
So that's really interesting, because obviously in the case of what he's doing with Apple, a lot of that stuff has already been written. I mean, so he's doing, what's it, Lizzie's Story. Is that how you pronounce it? Lizzie's Story?
I don't know.
The Stephen King book.
Yeah.
Which, as Andrew wrote for us on TMO yesterday, I think, it's going to star Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
And Stephen King is writing the episodes. J.J. Abrams is producing. So there is going to be that structure there already, isn't there? He's not going to have quite the level, the kind of, I mean, not going to be in the situation that you're describing.
Well, right. So J.J. Abrams is an excellent filmmaker. He's just not a very good storyteller.
Okay.
I didn't specify that. He is an excellent filmmaker. Absolutely
so maybe
excellent.
Combined with Stephen King, that's going to be quite a good double act.
It could be, yeah. Yeah. If he's not, if JJ isn't doing the writing, it probably will be a very good combo. There's a show he did called Revolution.
Right.
Post-apocalyptic set in the States. Electricity has gone away and mayhem ensues. And J.J. Abrams' name was all over it, but it was actually J.J. put his name and money on it, or, you know, got money with his name on it, but it was actually the guys who do Supernatural. What's their name? Supernatural producers.
Yeah.
We're gonna figure this out.
I think I know who you mean.
It is... What's his name? Gosh darn it. But anyway, they were the ones who were doing the storytelling.
Right.
And Robert Singer is who I'm thinking of.
Right.
Robert Singer. He's one of the main guys. He's an excellent storyteller. And Supernatural was, Revolution was a great show. It only lasted for 2 seasons because sci-fi has a very difficult time ever making it on American TV. But there you have it.
So maybe Apple has actually got this right by having Abrams and kind of in charge of the filmmaking side and other people in charge of the storytelling.
Let me tell you, my opinion doesn't matter. Like, all of my little complaints don't mean anything. J.J. Abrams is a massive force within the TV industry and the movie industry.
Sure.
He is an empire in and of himself within L.A. and within the Hollywood industry, and all of those things that I was saying have nothing to do with his ability to get a show together. And I would imagine that no one at Apple was saying, like, we should bring J.J. Abrams on, but we should not have him do the storytelling because he's not a very good... That conversation didn't happen. That conversation didn't happen whatsoever. And it would be...
I personally think people at Apple should listen to you more, Brian. So,
well,
I'm
they,
not
yeah,
convinced.
They probably should. I'm gonna agree with you there. And this... J.J. Abrams was brought on board by Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich. Right?
Yeah, for sure. And they're the guys running the media side of it. Although
right.
we know Tim Cook is very involved.
Apparently, right? What's up?
Right.
What is up with that? Sending notes? Why is he? Why would he do that? Why would he presume?
Because they can't help themselves.
I made this point with someone else, and I think it was on this show. But can you imagine if J.J. Abrams and Jennifer Aniston were like giving Tim Cook notes on what the iPhone interface looked like?
I kind of think that could be quite a good idea if he listened to them. But yes, I
think it would be a terrible idea.
Why? Listen to normal people how they use their phone.
They're not normal people.
I'm winding you up. Don't explode. I'm just going to hear a bang from the other side of the Atlantic, and it's going to be Brian. I've broken him.
Exactly. Anyway, my point is, like, you know, stick to your wheelhouse. I agree with you. You brought Hollywood people, Zach Vandenberg and Jamie Ehrlich. Mm-hmm. You brought them in to do this because your own first attempts at producing your own shows was terrible. So mm-hmm. let them do their job.
You get Planet of the Apps again.
Yeah. Or you get the first season of Carpool Karaoke, which was not good.
Hey, you're talking to a Brit here. You can't be rude about James Corden.
That's just it. Those shows were recut, right? Do you know that backstory?
They took it out of his nighttime show, didn't they? And then put it on as an Apple thing.
No. The shows were recut to remove profanity.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Which is why I think they feel kind of disjointed and not, you know, they don't
have...
Did that
actually happen?
Yes. And that's why it was delayed for so long.
But that's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. It is absolutely crazy, and it's that sort of prudishness that really bugs me about. Let me rephrase that. It worries me about Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on this. I mean Kelly was telling us the story of this Stephen King story. It sounds pretty horrifying. I don't think there's any prudishness there, but. You know, Apple will have a problem that if they, you know, they've given J.J. Abrams and Stephen King the reins to produce a horror series. And if they then try and rein it in, it's going to feel pretty weak, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not going to work. If you've given these guys who know how to, like you say, produce beautiful cinematography, write horror stories, if you've given them the freedom to do that, and then you get nervous at the last minute that it's a bit scary and horrible, audiences are going to know that. It's going to feel... It's not going to work.
So Apple is another great storyteller on board, and that's Ronald Moore.
Right.
Right? He's the guy that did Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. He's done a lot of things. He was also involved in Star Trek The Next Generation for many years. And he is a great storyteller. I love his storytelling. And the last episode of Battlestar Galactica notwithstanding. And my point is that let him tell a story he wants to tell. Let him make the TV series he wants to make. For that matter, all my whining about J.J. Abrams a while back, let J.J. make the movie that he wants to make. He's pretty good at it. And let Oprah do the shows that she... Of course, you know, the reality is that Tim and Oprah are probably pretty in sync on, you know, putting together wholesome entertainment, right?
Yeah, I suspect Oprah is the least of the culture clash. It's, you know...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You've also got the...
Well put.
Yeah, and you've got the Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston thing, which I suspect is not... It's meant to be a bit edgy, but I don't think he's going to offend anyone either. But then you've got stuff like J.J. Abrams and Stephen King producing a horror series
mm-hmm.
with, you know, starring a big star in Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let it do its thing.
Let them do what they're really, really good at.
And
maybe send your notes to the Mac engineers saying, hey, make more Macs. that's where I personally want Tim Cook's notes to be going. Make to the Mac right. team. Make more Macs. Hey, get those ready to go faster.
Right, exactly. And put some T2 chips in them as well while you're at it.
Yeah. Put some T2 chips in it. All right. That's pretty sure that horse is dead. Let's move on to another dead horse, Ming Chi Kuo.
Wow.
Not a fan of his either, man. Why do everyone puts this guy on the pedal?
This is how we're starting this section, is it?
Yes. Welcome to ACM.
I mean, we knew from the beginning this was going to be one of those shows, but you've really gone there. So, yes, Ming Chi Kuo, the exalted, put on a pedestal, analyst based out in the Far East.
He is, here's where I get cranky about, okay, all right, here's where I get cranky about him. He's wrong all the time, and yet everyone pretends that he's right all the time. He's not wrong 100% of the time. He's actually right quite often, but he's wrong quite often. And everyone always talks about him in terms of like always being right, and that just bugs me.
Right. So this week I wrote up a note he produced that was updating some of the timeline for iMacs and iPads and stuff. Okay. Like you say, he shifted the timeline again. No, he did say there would be wireless charging for AirPods. I mean, not disclosing any secrets here, but I get paid significantly less than Ming Chi Kuo gets paid, and I probably could have guessed that as well, right?
Well, okay, here's where I got to defend him. The dude is plugged into the Apple supply chain. By which I mean he
certainly is. That is undoubtedly correct. Yeah.
And there's a difference between a prediction and a deducement or deduction. A deduction.
I'm really enjoying the making up word show with Brian Chaffin. It's good.
Oh my god, did I really even say that?
I mean, it's a thing, it's happened, no one heard it though.
That's good. Yeah, because I erased it.
I mean, it doesn't even happen.
Okay, so there's a difference between a prediction and a deduction, and yeah,
what
we could, you know, maybe we could have predicted wireless charging AirPods, but that is something that that's one of the things he got right. And that's,
he did get it right. He said a new generation of AirPods was coming out in 2020. Now, does AirPods 2 mean he was wrong, or do we have a new lot coming out? Ooh.
Well, that's a year and a half. Like, you know, you would presume that's probably something from in the fall of 2020. So, yeah.
He's probably going to be right
about
that.
This is always the problem with being plugged into Apple supply chain, is that no matter how many data points you have, let me rephrase that. No matter how many data points someone can reasonably have, because obviously if you have all the data points, you could actually know precisely what Apple is doing. But the company's operations are so incredibly massive, and Apple's success on the manufacturing side is one of the unheralded, I'm making it more words, success stories.
the dictionary show with Brian Chaffin.
Of the modern era, right? The fact
which
that
is
Apple
down to Tim, let a lot of credit for that goes to Tim Cook.
Yeah, Tim Cook, and then also Jeff Williams.
Right.
Right. The few products that they ship that are new, they ship. You know, it wasn't that long ago. I'm not sure. You might have still been in high school, but it used to be that, you know, whenever Apple would release a new iPhone, there were long waits. There were long waits to get them because they couldn't make enough at first. And that's seldom an issue anymore, even though Apple is shipping more units than ever. And for Apple to, I mean, like Apple's manufacturing operations are
Brian,
really...
Brian, I'm really sorry. I was still in high school when the first iPhone was released.
Yeah, I figured as much.
It was 2007.
It was, yes. I chose my words carefully.
Hang on, no, I might have just started. Sorry, I just started university.
Okay, all right. Well, in that case, I stand corrected. So my point is that Apple's manufacturing operations are really a moonshot product in and of themselves. It's just too bad that Apple doesn't unleash those operations on shipping more new Macs every year. That's all I want. I want new Macs every year.
Brian wants an iMac.
I'm actually excited about the new iMac. I'm going to get one.
That's yeah, but you wanted it for 4 years, 3 years?
Well, 2 years. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, what's he saying now? We're supposed to be talking about Michi Kuo.
No, we are talking about him because he said basically there's going to be a new 15-inch to 17-inch MacBook Pro that comes in first half of 2021.
So
we're going to see
2 years from now.
That's what he's saying.
Oh, good lord!
He said a 10-inch to 12-inch iPad will arrive around the fourth quarter of 2020, or again the first quarter of 2021.
I don't see Apple waiting that long for new iPads. I'm not buying this one.
It does seem quite a long gap. I agree with you. So he said there's going to be a 31.6-inch display, which I think is the one he's sticking to. That's going to be a 6K display. He also thinks there's going to be a 16.6 MacBook Pro that would land later this year. That's what he originally said and then updated it to go back a bit. We're going to have to wait a bit longer to that.
I like the 6K. I hope he's right about that one because it also probably means that the Mac Pro will come out too. I would expect a high-end display to come out with the Mac Pro.
Sure, that makes sense. I mean, like I say, he is sticking to that will arrive in the second or third quarter of this year.
Well, that would be... I would be super excited about that.
You would be very happy for a 6K display, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I doubt that I could afford it by any stretch.
Yes, it's
going to
be many monies, isn't it?
It's going to be huge monies. I'm pretty I would love a 31.6 inch 6K display. Oh my goodness,
It would be pretty exciting.
I'm going to get lost in like some dreams here if I'm not careful. So let's actually hope he's right about that one. I hope that he's wrong that we're not going to see new MacBooks coming out until 2020 or 2021. Good Lord.
Yeah, MacBook Pro is 2021 instead of 2019 is what he's saying. Now, I don't know. I don't know if there's some of the Qualcomm chip-based debates as part of this problem. We know Apple are wanting to build their own chipsets. I don't quite... If the holdup is as he describes, I don't quite know where that's coming from. I think, but also the more general point that we started off this conversation is of how he's kind of taken on this role as the great predictor and great deducer. Have I just made up a word as well? Of Apple
products.
No, I think
products. Deducer is a real word.
It is interesting.
Well, so, okay. There have been other analysts who have been plugged into Apple supply chain.
Sure.
The Taiwanese news publication Digitimes was also plugged into Apple's production.
They're often the ones that break if production is ramping up, is ramping down. They often get this, like, they were telling us a lot of stuff about iPhone orders, weren't they, before Apple confirmed it?
Yeah, and it's interesting. For a while, they were also always wrong. Like Digitimes would say something, and it would never end up being the case. But the reality is that was a period of about 12 to 24 months, roughly. And then the longer they were plugged into Apple supply chain, the more accurate they got. And most Apple fans tended not to give them any credit for becoming increasingly correct. And it's sort of like the opposite with Min-Chi Kuo, where everyone gives him credit for being right, even though he has a significant track record of also being wrong. I would like to, by the way, add that one thing that I said he was going to be wrong about was Apple moving iPad to USB-C. I said that he was wrong, and it was me that was wrong. Min-Chi Kuo nailed that one. And, you know, credit where it's due. So so what I was saying earlier about data points within Apple supply chain is that there are so many moving parts from the standpoint of companies and people. And it is like one of the problems that Digitimes would often get itself in trouble with is like Apple would order some number of parts that were probably being used for prototypes. And the vast majority of Apple prototypes never become a shipping product.
Right. It's like as soon as we see a patent, everyone's like, oh, Apple is making this. Like,
yeah,
it might never, ever happen.
Apple has ordered this size screen. So therefore they're going to release, a MacBook Pro or a TV, a TV or whatever it is. The thing to understand, in my opinion, about anyone claiming sources within Apple supply chain is to realize that the kernel of the story is probably correct. That there's some part that somebody at some company has been involved with that has something to do with Apple, and that is true. And that serves as the kernel of the story. Where analysts and publications like Digitimes would get it wrong is the conclusions that they would reach from that small data point. That's where they end up screwing up a lot. And that's one of the things that Tim Cook has addressed. Tim Cook and who else has said it? Tim Cook has certainly said it, where he talks about how that any one data point is never going to give you the full picture of what Apple is doing. And also keep in mind that their hedge funds in particular are out there paying money to people that work in Apple supply chain trying to figure out what they're going to do so that they can make bets. There is a lot of money in understanding what Apple is going to do.
Of course, yeah.
And that's what's feeding these stories. People like to be knowledgeable. Maybe they've got a friend over to publication. Maybe they just want to maybe they want to feel important for a little bit. But then there's also people who are being bribed and people who are being paid to be informants to the hedge funds, to analysts like Min-Chi Kuo, to publications. And that's where all this stuff stems from.
Yeah, look, I think we're all interested in Apple supply chain. I'm always dubious about these stories because, like you say, there's so many ways that it can be wrong. I think just back to Min-Chi Kuo as an individual, I think the kind of cult of Min-Chi Kuo is fascinating and how everyone, I'm saying this as someone who's just written up his latest note or whatever. I do find the way we hang on his every word kind of interesting. I find it intriguing how he's kind of obtained this position. But also, look, this is the biggest company in the world we're talking about, Apple. People want to know what it's doing and why. And, that is always going to be the case, isn't it?
Yeah. When it stops being the case, Apple's got a problem.
Right, exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah. And
anyway, fair play to Min-Chi Kuo for building a very nice career for himself by doing this.
For sure. And I certainly hope he's wrong about MacBook Pros, or at the very least, I hope that his information is about the generation after the next generation, because that's just way too long to wait. If we end up waiting two and a half years for a MacBook Pro, I'm just going to be livid. Livid.
I mean, it is quite a long time, though, isn't it?
It is a ridiculously long time. And I also hope he's correct about this display. And again, because it probably means that we'll be seeing the Mac Pro at this about the same time. Yeah. And note, by the way, he didn't say anything about the Mac Pro, but the Mac Pro could well be being
No, I didn't see anything in the reporting about a Mac Pro, which would have come out, wouldn't it?
Yes, if he was talking about it. But my point is that I see significant chance of the Mac Pro being produced in Austin, which is where the current Mac Pro is produced. And it's produced by in-house employees, the current one, the trash can one, right? And that's how Apple was able to surprise us when they first announced the trash can in the first place, is because it was all being done in-house. It means Chi Kuo doesn't have any sources within Apple, in-house within Apple. So this actually leads a lot of credence to him saying that the display is going to be released later this year and not mentioning the Mac Pro, because he wouldn't know anything about the Mac Pro if it's being produced in Austin. So now I'm getting kind of excited.
Ooh, yes, because you do also want a new trash can.
No. I would like a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
I don't want a trash can Mac Pro.
Okay.
I want whatever the new Mac Pro is that Apple's supposed to be working on. I'm hoping it's significantly better than the trash can. Trash can is sexy, but it was flawed as a Pro device.
Yeah, I just kind of thought it looked nice.
It does look nice. It's just not a Pro device. It looks nice at least until you know my
feelings on this. Snake's nest. I think Apple has decided that all iMacs are Pro devices now.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Yeah, but you're wrong, so it's fine.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank Molecule for sponsoring us today. I'd like to thank Charlotte Henry for joining me from...
Thank you for having me back.
Across the ocean.
Yes.
That is a very good thing. And with that in mind, let's do this. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. My bandwidth, our bandwidth even, is provided by CacheFly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And that is all for this week. Again, Charlotte, thank you kindly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Indeed.